All right, so good morning, technically afternoon. I'm Ellen Vorenkamp, and I am an assessment consultant at Wayne RESA, which is the Regional Educational Service Agency down by the airport, and we service Wayne County. We have 33 districts and about 100 some odd charter schools, and my job is to do a lot of assessment development with whoever knocks on our door and says, hey, we need some help with assessment development. So I do a lot around quality assessments and making sure that we are actually measuring what we're teaching and that we're using the right rigor and that we are creating balance within our system, not only between the summative and the formative, but between the different types of ways that we can assess kids. So thinking about, you know, if we're using a lot of selected response or if we're using constructed response or if we're using performance tasks and assessments. And so I sit on the committee for the organization of this conference as well. And what happens is we ask you, like I think part of that survey is what would you guys like to hear more about? And then we come to it with ideas too in terms of what our constituents, because all of us are in different, you know, places around the state. And so we sit there at this little round table and Ed Raber pounds us and says, okay, what topics do we need to have at the next conference? And then he assigns different people to go and find people who will do different, you know, the sessions. And what tends to happen is I get asked to set up several different, you know, probably like 10 or 15. And then I try to find people to do them for me and I can't. So I end up doing them myself. So performance tasks or performance assessment is one that I actually really like though. So this is a good one for me. The one this morning was a little bit more Joseph Martineau than it was me, but that's all right. So I'm really happy to come and talk to you about how you can develop engaging performance assessments and what those might look like in your classrooms. And we're actually going to be talking to one another. So those of you that are sitting by yourselves, you're going to have to find a partner in crime somewhere along the way. And we're going to do a couple of activities because I want to kind of demonstrate to you how easy you can make some of these performance assessments. So don't get too comfortable where you're at. We're going to be moving around and doing an activity towards the end. And I'm also going to show you a tiny URL, a website where you can go and find some examples of some performance assessments that have already been developed that you might be able to take back and use and then use as exemplars as you develop your own. So how many of you are classroom teachers that we're talking with today? Okay, got quite a few. How about principals, building level principals, administrators? Nice. What about district level? Okay, good. Anybody from the state? Phew, good. Andy Middlestead was in my last one, and whenever you have to talk in front of Andy and you're talking about how formative assessment is better than summative and how that M step is, you know, you have to be careful. College, universities, school board members? Did I hit everybody? Counselors? Okay. All right. So this really is for everybody, but I want you to think about some of this context in relation to your position and what you do and how you can help make sure that performance assessment is something that's actually embedded in your systems of balance as you start to think about how we assess kids, especially in terms of rigor. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with a quick activity. And of course, everything doesn't want to work now. Where I'm going to ask you to think about an assessment that you may have had when you were in school that was a performance-based assessment. And I want you to think about that for a minute and its impact on you. And then have some conversation with a colleague. And I put at your table because I was hoping we would be at tables, so we'll just pretend. What are some of the characteristics of that performance assessment that you may have been engaged in when you were in school, and why was it successful, and what were some of those characteristics? So everybody just take a minute and think of something that you remember back through your schooling about some sort of performance assessment that you may have been engaged in. And then I want you to find somebody to talk to and just kind of share what it was, and as you're sharing, kind of pull out some of the characteristics of that performance assessment and what its impact on you was. Might there be any questions? I think I said about 18 times, so I think we're good. All right. I'll give you about 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Do y'all get a chance to share in our triad? Okay.
Yeah.
If our triad's done, I'm guessing our
That's right.
partners should. All right, give you about 1 minute to finish that last thought, but not start a new paragraph. All right, please pause. So would somebody like to share? Maybe, first of all, I'm interested to know, how many of you, as soon as I asked you to think of a performance assessment, had something immediately in mind? A couple of you? How many of you did it take a while? How many of you had nothing? What's a performance? I never had any. Okay. And those of you that remembered fairly immediately, what was the impact that that performance task? Let's just share. Somebody tell me something that you have done and then its impact on you and why you can still remember and it came to your head almost immediately. Go ahead.
Some sense of like what that actually takes in terms of storyboarding and putting that whole thing together. So I guess sort of as a just a memory of how bad it could be, I guess.
Okay.
Not a bad experience, but just the quality was so poor.
Okay. Was there anything that the teacher could have done that it could have made it better for you to have made that video a more without any kind of like a rubric or success criteria? Okay. Okay. What else? Yeah. Couple of things that you said, characteristics. Anybody pull out some of the things she said about characteristics of good quality performance tasks? Just in her little example, what were some things that you hear? Application? Yep. Do you remember any multiple choice test you took on the physics that you may have learned and what those questions were and how you answered them? Probably not, right? So application of the information. What else did you hear? Yep. Yep, so success criteria is very evident. So there was a clear purpose and a clear, did you get it, yes or no, kind of a thing. Yep, what else?
There's some type of collaboration.
Yeah, yeah. Collaboration and working with your colleagues, which is very 21st century, right? How many of you, some of you teachers probably go into your classrooms and work alone, but the majority of us should be working, you know, with our team members and having those conversations, right? You think about it. Work is a performance task every day, right? Because you're not just sitting there learning and thinking about, you know, assessment and how you're going to use this data. You're actually out there doing it, right? So they can be very authentic. Anything else that you may have heard in her description? Yeah.
I'm going to phrase it differently, but I'm going to say an element of play and tinkering.
Yeah, that exploration piece, right? Discovering creativity, which when you think about it in our world of education today is getting fewer and far between when we're so worried about covering standards, right, and making sure kids have this information. sometimes we miss the boat in terms of thinking if kids can actually use this information, right, and using it in a meaningful way. So when we have our balanced assessment system within our classroom and we think about, yeah, we need to make sure they know the knowledge, but we also need to make sure that they're able to explain that knowledge, that would be your constructed response, and we also need to see if they can apply it, and that would be your performance tasks. So when I think about some of the characteristics, these are some of the big ideas that come to my mind. I'm not sure why this thing isn't working. Students create, perform, or present something on their own, which can be evaluated. But the process of doing it can be very formative in nature, right? So something like a research paper, if it's really well designed and you have a clear purpose, could be a performance task, right? Because you're asking the kids to actually take all of these concepts and all of these skills that you've actually been drilling them with around how to write and how to write a research paper and how to cite and all that kind of stuff, and you're putting it into an actual authentic experience for them. You don't wait until the very end, though, to grade it. Right? You do things along the way to give the kids feedback, or you put them in different groups and allow them to have dialogue, allow them to have conversation, do that collaboration, maybe even do some play with it as best you can in the language arts classroom when their kids are writing research papers. But it's definitely something that they can do on their own, but I also think it's something that you can do in collaboration. When we're really careful about the way we design these, we can actually cover quite a few standards within these performance tasks. And so we have to be really careful about our purpose and how we design them. And we'll come back to that in a minute. The performance may be a simulation of real life skills. You think about anybody who's involved in CTE, right? That's a performance assessment all along the way, right? If anybody has anything to do with foreign language and whether or not the kids can speak, you cannot assess kids and whether or not they can speak Spanish by giving them a multiple choice or true-false test. What must they do? Speak, right? And that creates a performance. And so you have to set the stage for that to happen. The products of performance assessment can be of many types, and we're going to have more conversation around what that looks like. You can have projects, you can have tasks, you can have events, you can draw, you can have them do a dance, they can do, I mean, there's all kinds of different things that kids can do. And again, we'll talk more about that. Time to produce or prepare to present may be short or extended. So it may take one class period or it may take more than one. And we're going to read an article here in a minute that's going to actually explain that just a little bit more to you. May be done in class, outside of class, or both. And I think this is one of the reasons why we don't do a lot of performance assessments, is we think that if we're doing it in class, we're wasting time. And if we send it home, they don't do it, right? So we always have that conundrum about how much time can we actually dedicate to assessing kids as they're going along and developing these performances, and how much time do we just really need to make sure that we're giving them direct instruction. If performance assessments are done really well, it can be both at the same time. We just need to help teachers recognize that it's the same. I see a lot of good performance assessments going on in classrooms when I go out and visit classrooms, and yet teachers don't really think of them as performance assessments. They think of them as projects, and then they give them a test at the end to see if they know the information, where they've just done a wonderful activity where they can see that the kids are applying the information, so obviously they know it, right? Why do we have to then put a multiple choice test on the end just because somebody thinks that we need a number rather than an observation or a conversation or a rubric or, you know, some of the things that come with performance assessments? So I think it's about helping teachers recognize. There is one high school that I've been doing some work with that you think this, I mean, I was like ecstatic. They're getting rid of final exam weeks completely, because why should we wait until the very last and have the kids take 100 multiple choice item tests to determine whether or not they've learned anything? Why can't we do performance things all along the way to determine whether or not kids know this information? So they're kind of just blowing it out of not proportion, they're blowing it. But they're also doing it for a very important reason. And I'll tell you what it is if you're interested. This particular school did some research. And what they recognized is that their school, their high school, and this is a large comprehensive high school, was built around getting 100% of their kids to college and career ready. So everything in their high school was geared towards that goal. Then they did some research, and they realized that only less than 30% of their kids are actually going to college and getting a four-year degree within 5 years. That the majority of their kids are actually going into CTE or going into work or going into the military or doing things quite different. So they're sitting there thinking about their comprehensive high school and how it's 100% geared towards getting kids to college, and yet only 30% of their kids are actually doing that. So what about that 70%? And what do they need? And how might performance assessments help them? So they're kind of rethinking their whole structure, which is pretty unusual for a large comprehensive high school in urban areas. We'll be interested to see how it continues. And I would love to have them come and talk maybe at the next Michigan School Testing Conference. So we'll see. Students may work alone or with other students, and it does require a standardized mean for scoring. So you do have some sort of checklist or rubric or something that the kids can actually assess their work against. And if more than one class is doing this and you're using it as a common performance assessment among all the Algebra 1 teachers or all the physics teachers, that they have some understanding of what that looks like, and they're assessing kids in a very similar way with what their levels of proficiency might be. So, what else did you guys have that I didn't in terms of characteristics of performance assessments that you may have brought up during your conversations? Did I miss anything that you guys may have spoken about? I think we missed that creativity piece, right? And I think that's really important. Anything? All right. I just hate this thing. I keep holding on to it like it's going to magically start working. We're going to watch a quick little video. And this is Stuart Krall. And Stuart Krall is a director of the Center. Well, he used to be the president and owner of Measured Progress. And I'm not exactly sure what Measured Progress calls himself now. But I want just to listen to him. He's going to give you a quick definition of what a performance assessment is. You know, it's a good day when your technology works, right? Maybe.
Definition of performance assessment is quite variable. When I first got in the business many decades ago, any test item that was not selected response was considered performance. And nowadays we talk about much more engaged activities, I guess, a lot more in terms of a product than you would see from obviously a multiple choice item. And so I would say performance assessment is a measure that allows the student to demonstrate higher order thinking skills through a product or some other form of demonstration, perhaps an oral presentation, a report of a project, things like that. And so you're looking for a product that is evidence of deeper learning. The deeper learning, according to the National Academy, is the ability to apply foundational knowledge and skills to a more complex task, possibly problem solving in real life contexts.
Organization and talk with us. Now it doesn't want to even move. All right, so we're going to read a quick article, and this article is actually going to give us a little bit more information around performance assessments and how they're designed. So I'm going to ask Blaine, if he would, to take a stack. They're in stacks of seven, but you can pass them out however you want. And as you read, what I'd like you to do is follow this reading protocol. And so if you find something as you're reading that just sort of makes sense and you sort of already knew it, but it's a sort of a, like an affirmation, you're going to put a check mark, and then you might just put a little, note out in the side. If you find something that's an aha and you hadn't thought of that before and it's kind of a new insight, you're going to use an exclamation point. And then if there's anything that just raises any questions that you might want to bring forth as we debrief, you can just put the question mark and just write your question out in the margin as well. These little learning points, again, are from the Assessment Learning Network that's sponsored by the Michigan Assessment Consortium. We have hundreds of these. You've probably seen them at the table out there. They are very quick. So I'm going to give you about 6 minutes, 7 minutes to read, because it's just a real quick snapshot, very straightforward and to the point. And then when we're done, we're going to stand up and kind of find a partner, and we're going to debrief. But I'll tell you about that when we get done. So I'll give you about 6 minutes to read and use that reading protocol. Stand up and break out of these rows. Find somebody maybe on the other side of the room, but find somebody that is of a similar height as you. Similar height. And share out one of your exclamation points or check marks. Oh, we got some tall gentlemen right here. There's one behind you. Blaine, get in there. Sure, help yourself. Create a triad if you need to. Introduce yourselves. You got 1 more minute.
Yeah.
And there's some ELA and math, or do they just give us examples?
Those are just examples. Oh, they aren't in there yet. They're trying to build more science and social studies.
All right, go ahead and thank your partner. Give them a high five and head on back to your seats, please.
I hope we were really loud and bothered both sides of our room. So, thoughts. What stood out to you? What were some of your conversations around in terms of the article? Not everybody at once, please. We have to be orderly. Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And when you think about our Michigan Career and College Readiness Standards, they're fairly rigorous, they're fairly robust, and they do ask for a lot of transfer of that deeper learning and that skill application. I'm not sure I always see that in classrooms that I go into, but it can be there. And, of course, you have to know your kids, right, and their level, and you have to do some of the foundational work, but you can eventually get your kids to some of that higher order thinking. Sometimes, you know, they surprise us, and they actually like that a lot more. then they can come back to the skills that they may have been missing through those experiences. So, yeah, and I think that's why right now the science curriculum is really these 3D assessments, and part of that being these application of the knowledge and doing these labs as performance assessments and things. Yeah, thank you for that. And yeah, pay would be nice to score them. Yeah, I do have a product that I can tell you about that might help with that, though. Exactly.
And I was working with one of our teams recently, and we really started thinking, like, okay, guys, you wrote these common formative and summative assessments. We've worked with them. Okay, so what's the next step? And I would say, like, if I were to have that assessment, they do a really good job of determining what kids know. Now our next step might be, like, what are some opportunities to show
them
what they can do.
Right. Yeah.
They
do.
Yeah.
And it needs to be a natural flow, right? These these aren't something that you add on. These are something that are embedded, right, within your instruction and within your learning. And one thing that it can do is if you create an expectation that performance assessments are a valid type of assessment that need to be implemented, it can change your teaching, right? Because all of a sudden you're teaching kids in a different way that's much more rigorous, much more higher order, much more exploratory, much more about discovery, much more about curiosity. You know, those things that you want, especially if any of you have been doing any of that reading around ambitious teaching in the 21st century, you know, that's what we want kids to do. We don't want them to sit there and be receptacles that can then just regurgitate on a multiple choice test. If I'm teaching that way and my assessments are designed that way, that's how I'm going to teach, right? But if my assessments have a different purpose and that purpose is more in-depth application, then I'm going to have to change the way that I teach. So this is kind of a pedagogical shift, right? This is really upping the ante. And not all teachers want to go there. Not all teachers feel they need to go there. We have quite a few teachers in the classroom. I'm sure most of you are already doing that because you're here and you're learners, and we know that about you. So that's a positive. What else? Thank you. Somebody else. We got 1, 2, and 3, and then we'll get, okay?
On the back side, the second paragraph, I really like when it says whether students are provided the opportunity to revise or improve their initial responses. I think allowing time so they can revise their knowledge and their understanding is very powerful.
Absolutely.
It's just sometimes teachers run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding a way to give them the opportunity to revise their thinking.
Yeah. There's that feedback piece, you know, and giving them that feedback and managing the feedback is one thing, and then allowing them to use that feedback is a whole other thing. But there's a great article by Grant Wiggins. It's called 7 Principles of Feedback or something like that. And in it, he talks, the very last paragraph, he talks about how it has to be timely, it has to be the right amount, it has to be in the right mode, it has to be given at the right time to the right children, and it doesn't all have to look the same, and each kid is individual, and make your feedback individual. But at the very end, he says, and as I go around the country, I think he's passed away now, but when I go around the country, I hear a lot of people saying, I don't have time to give feedback. And he says, if you don't have time to give feedback, then you do not have time to cause learning. And what are we doing in our classrooms if we're not causing learning to go on? And so this feedback piece becomes an integral part of the process of developing and implementing these performance assessments. We don't wait just to the end. The end is when we evaluate, but during the building of them, we're nudging the kids. And that's very formative in nature. Thank you for lifting that. Who is my 2? Joe, I think you had something.
Now, the question of what am I reading this for? What am I reading this for? If you can answer that question, not only do kids become a little bit more invested because they actually see a purpose, but also all of my experiences were more meaningful. Like everybody talks about those early performance studies, there is more meaningful learning mixed in.
It's the ones you remember. Yep. Great. One more, and then we'll move on. Nice. Thank you. And that's a perfect segue into where we're going next. Because when I first read the article, that was my big takeaway too. And so I just want to give you some examples of what these two different performance events can look like. So the first one would be a performance event, the second one would be a task, and they're really distinguished by the complexity and the length of time, and oftentimes where the kids are actually doing it, and then whether or not they have the opportunity to revise, you know, as they're going through and developing this project. So give you kind of a look there. Performance events are usually on demand, right? They're usually shorter, kind of right in the moment while you're sitting in the classroom. The students are usually given very little or no time to rehearse. You just want to see if they know it at that given point, and then you can assess and evaluate and figure out where you might need to go next. Little opportunities, or at least limited opportunities, to improve that particular event. although the teacher can use the information to help them improve the concepts and the thinking behind that event. And when they have a second one, maybe they will do better because they've had that learning opportunity because you've directed your instruction to where some of their needs might be. And they're usually given within a class period or less. Performance tasks are a little bit more engaging. They're probably more of what we think of when we think of a performance task or a project-based type of an event. It might take weeks, days, even months to perform or to actually engage in when you're giving feedback all along the way. They may include multiple responses and or props, so there might be different layers to them. These might actually cover several standards in one sort of event, and having clarity around which pieces of the performance task are getting at which standard, making sure you have that purpose and that defined really well. Performance events can typically are more about just one particular standard at one given time. Responses may be lengthy and comprised of multiple parts, and they may involve multiple opportunities for feedback. Also, I would suggest that the tasks are more about cooperation and collaboration, and you may have more group work involvement, whereas the event might be more one student, one-on-one type of a thing. So let me give you an example, and this is from the, there's a great webinar online. It's called Performance Assessments by Susan Brookhart, and she uses these examples, and so I just screenshot them. So this was a particular teacher, and she just wanted to know if her third grade math students could recognize polygons in everyday life. So she asked them to actually just, in a very short amount of time, just take out a sheet of paper and draw me a picture with polygons that you would see in your environment. And this is what she got from one of her third grade students. So instead of doing a multiple choice test where the kid had to pick out with, you know, they were able to just draw it. That's an event. It took place very quickly. She gave him about 10 to 15 minutes. She was able to ascertain whether or not the kids knew what polygons were by the pictures that they drew. Turn to your partner and say something about that particular event. I know, me either. So, do we have any third grade math teachers in the class, in the audience? Fourth grade math teachers, somewhere around this grade level? Okay. Any math teachers at all? How would you assess this child performance? Do you think they actually know what polygons in real life look like? Probably much more so than just sorting through the polygon. Yeah. Do you think you would require a scoring guide for this if you had several teachers that were doing this across several classrooms and wanting to come back together and have conversation? Or do you think you can just look at it and determine whether or not the kids know it or not? Something you might have to have conversation around. Typically with a performance event, it's less in terms of the scoring guide and the rubrics and that kind of a thing. But again, it would depend. It would depend on how complex it is and what the standard was and how many people were giving that particular assessment. You know, you were talking about common assessments and if you wanted to have dialogue around it. But I think at first glance, this one's pretty simple. Another example might be something like this, and this would be a task. So this is a 12th grade ELA class, and they had just got finished reading Julius Caesar. And then she wanted them to be able to show a deep understanding of the play by creating a newspaper. So this were groups of kids working together, or it could have been one child working by themselves, and they had to create an example of a newsletter. Think about what's involved in this task and the complexity of it. It's not just about reading Julius Caesar, right? There's all kinds of other things. And they had actually been studying some things around informational text and what newspapers look like and how newspapers look and how newspapers behave and, you know, those types of things. So this was actually encompassing several different standards. This might be a little bit more what you would look for when you think about performance assessment in general, but this is just one type of it. This one does take longer. Do you think she would probably need a rubric? Yeah. There's probably going to be something sitting behind this. Do you think she maybe shared that rubric with the students? One would hope so. One would hope so. So again, take a minute and just share with your partner any other thoughts you might have about this. And there's this whole thinking around the difference between an event and a task. And then we're going to play a game. So just quickly, by a show of hands, if you had been in this teacher's 12th grade ELA class and you had read Julius Caesar and had to have done an activity like this, a performance assessment such as this, as opposed to a multiple choice test where you're just answering questions, how many of you think you would remember this and what Julius Caesar was all about more? Me too. Me too. I just keep remembering back to my college years when I was at Baylor University, sick and bears, and taking all those Shakespeare classes and can't even remember any of it. But if I had been assessed in this manner, I think I would have, because I still remember in fourth grade making it to the North Pole and not dying of scurvy because we were the only group who remembered to bring vitamin C because my dad was a doctor and he told me to. So I was like, yeah, yeah. And Mrs. Waymire, bless her heart. All right, give you a minute to talk. Just read this real quick and pick out anything that's important. This is Susan Brookhart, and again, this is from her webinar. It's not the way you're supposed to do slides, I know, but. There's a couple of key ideas in there. Can anybody want to lift one for us? Yes, yes. So it may vary from one content level or one content to the other, and it might vary from one grade level to the next, right? Because it really has to be embedded in the content. What else are you picking out of that? I think they have to be carefully designed. To me, that's huge. It's nothing where you can just go to a conference, oh, that's a fun practice, and then go home and, you know, I used to do that all the time. Oh, that's a great idea. I'm going to go do that in my class. And then we get halfway done, I'm like, I don't even think this relates to any standards that I'm supposed to be teaching, but we're having fun, right? You know, and the kids are like, okay, got to be carefully designed. You have to think about your purpose, and you have to start with your end in mind, and your end in mind should always be, what do I want my students to gain from this? And that has to be aligned with the state standards, in my opinion, or your curriculum, which should be based on the state standards, right? One would hope. What else? Anything else? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's the clarity piece. That's the success criteria. I go back to my friend Rick Stiggins. Kids can hit any target as long as they can see it, and it holds still long enough for them to get there, right? So, you know, another piece of this that I think is really important is I've been doing some research around another session that I'm doing tomorrow called Developing Assessment-Capable Visible Learners. And in that, John Hattie and Doug Fisher and Nancy Fry talk a little bit about stamina. And how our kids don't have stamina. And Nancy tells a story about when she goes to the gym, sometimes she uses light weights and does a lot of reps. Sometimes she uses heavy weights and does a few reps, right? So it's that whole dance between difficulty and stamina. And they talk about how sometimes we have to give the kids low difficulty but high stamina activities so that they will persevere, so that they will finish. Some of these performance tasks may take some time, but they don't have to be really difficult. Sometimes they might be difficult and take time, but we have to expose kids to all of that so they get used to not only using their brain, but staying with something and making sure. And a performance task, I think, can do that for you, much more so than a multiple choice test. So I love that. And I love show what you know. We talk a lot about differentiated instruction. I also think we need to differentiate our assessment. And we have some kids who can show us what they know much better than they can regurgitate what we think they need to know. We just have to be open enough, and we have to be able to see what it is we're looking for. And so we have to be very clear about what that is. Our success criteria has to be very clear. So this is the work of Jay McTighe, and Jay McTighe is actually coming out with a brand new book, and I'll tell you what the name of it is at the end. He talks about how we have to design the purpose, right? What do you want the kids to do? What do you want to be able to see, hear? You know, what are they going to be able to show you that they know? You need to make sure that you design the format of the task or the event so that it's aligned, right? That it's based on some standards and you have a clear idea of what those standards are and what proficiency within a performance assessment would look like. Then you have to design it. Think about what the role is going to be. Think about who the audience is going to be. Think about what the project is going to be. Think about your resources, right? Think about your time. There's all kinds of things that come into play. And he's got a wonderful checklist. He used to have a website that you could go to. If you just maybe look up Jay McTighe, he used to have like all kinds of sheets that teachers could use to think about and plan out some of these more performance tasks than events. But then he always would talk about revising. Always revising, because every time you do it, you're going to find out how you could have done it better, right? And so making sure you do that revision. All right, advantages and disadvantages. Let's hit that real quick, and then I really want to get to this activity. So turn to a partner, and what might be some advantages or disadvantages of embedding performance assessments into your classroom assessment experience? Cut you short. Sorry. So I'm going to flash up what I think are some of the advantages and challenges, and then I want you to add to it anything that I may have missed. So I think some of the advantages are that it promotes student engagement. I also think it promotes retention. It provides artifacts that can be used for assessment if we design them properly. Real life application of not only the skills, but the content. What other advantages did you guys have? Yes, ma'am.
I think it also helps build relationships.
Absolutely. Builds relationships, allows for collaboration. What else? More authentic. We had some conversation. Joe mentioned that within the CTE. They remember it longer. It allows everybody to show what they know. Okay. It also breaks up boredom sometimes. All right, what about challenges? I have lack of understanding about how performance assessments can be embedded, so teachers are going to need support, right, on how to do this and what this looks like. And lack of good model performance assessments out there, which I actually have some examples that I'm going to share with you here in a few minutes that you could take and replicate. What are some other challenges? There are two that I didn't put up there purposely, but what do you have? Nice. Yep. So you might even be able to put some choice in there, right? So as long as you have real clear understanding of what the success criteria is, maybe the children can choose the vessel in which they show you what they know and create their own kind of performance. Definitely. Yeah. Oh, that was one I didn't put up there on purpose. Yeah. Right.
You've got to be multiple, and you've
got to
ensure that multiple standards are included in that.
Yep. So I don't like to think of it as eating up 4 months of, or 4 weeks of instruction. I think about instructing in a different way as you're, you know, and so it's a mind shift. I know what you meant. But time is always going to be an issue about everything we do, right? So I don't put it up there because we can overcome it. We just have to figure out where we want to spend our time, right? And I think this is a worthwhile event to spend our time on. The prettiness.
Getting caught up in how to make a video. Getting caught up on the font in my Google slide. Getting caught up. Like, there can be some things that can be barriers that can wipe away.
Yeah.
Learning of the actual.
I completely. Keep it on the standards. Yep. And even though yours might not have been beautiful, it was a real learning event for you, right? So, I mean, yeah. One more. Yeah, that could be an issue. Yeah, yeah. Or even if you do, or if you just have them do something completely different because they may not have even been around for some of the instruction that they would need in order to complete it. Yeah, and I think money is also too, because you're going to have some resources, right? You may need chart paper, you may need, you know, whatever. So, you know, it always comes down to time and money. But again, I think it's just a way that we emphasize and use our resources. All right, so I passed out a handout, and we're going to play a little game. And so I think I'm just going to do this. Is it okay if I just do it as a big group? Since we only have, I started 5 minutes early, so we have like 17 minutes. Or we can break up into groups. I don't care. This is an event, and this is an event that the Maya project put together. And if you're not familiar with Maya, it stands for Michigan Assessment and Education in Arts. Michigan, I don't know what it stands for. But I do know that there's a website, and it's the Maya website. And I do know that there have been a group of teachers from across the state of Michigan who, for the past 3 years approximately, in the areas of art, dance, music, and some of those fine arts places, have come together to design a whole lot, 360 different performance assessments that are residing on this website that can be used by fine arts teachers across the state. And the reason they did it is because there is no test, right, for fine arts teachers. So they were developing slows, they were trying to develop their own path. And go to the Michigan Assessment Consortium website and talk to them about that. Get the website, because they're just sitting there waiting for teachers to use them. But this is an activity that they do in some of their workshops about a short event, because many of theirs are tasks. We're going to do a short event. So in this handout, you have a poem, which is the first one. You have a dance, which is the second page. You have a art project, which is the third page. And then you have a song based on Row, Row, Row Your Boat, which is the last page. So I want each one of you to choose whichever one you want. Art, dance, if you want to sing, if you want to create a poem. Does everybody have a copy? Okay. What you would do if you wanted to do this with your faculty, just to kind of illustrate what an event could be, you'd break them up into four groups and give each one, okay? Or if you have a large group, into many groups and give each, you know, you can have more than one. And this is what you do. You take a die, and you roll it. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to roll it, and I'm going to tell you what the number is. And when I give you the number, you put it in the box. So, for instance, if you get a 1, your first roll is going to be hand-to-head. So if you're developing your dance, this is the first step of your dance. And it's going to be based on chance, okay, whatever the roll of the dice is. If you're singing the song, then the first part of your song is going to be row, row. If you're doing an art, it means the first thing you have to do is draw a circle. You see how that correlates? Okay, so are you ready? Everybody ready? Here's our first roll. It's a 6. So mark 6 in your first roll. Put a 6 for whatever handout you're using. You guys all with me? Okay, here's your next roll. So if you're doing the poem and you rolled a 6, you're going to put 6 for number 1. The poem is a little bit different. 5. One. What are the chances of me getting 4 different numbers in 4 rolls? I don't know. 2 again. 5 again. So take a minute, and if you did the art on the back, draw your piece of art. Normally you would do this as a group, and you would come up with a group project. If you did the poem, write your poem on the back of your handout. If you did a dance, get ready to get up and get to do the dance. You can start practicing in your seats while we're waiting. And if you did the song, write out your song and get ready to perform it for us. Any questions that you might have? All right, I'll give you a few minutes to figure it out. Big poster over here, feel free. You can share it with all of us. How much more time do you need? About 2 minutes? How many of you have a song? All right, get together real quick. See if you can practice it real quick. I want to hear the song when you're done. And I love that it's three men. How many of you did the dance? All right, you guys, you get together. Let's see what your dance is going to look like. How many of you did the poem? I'm going to just have one of you. Oh, you guys are so brave. Thank you. I appreciate it. Blaine knows me. That's why he's doing it. How many of you did the poem? Anybody? Will you recite it for us, Lisa? Okay. And what about the artwork? Did anybody do an artwork? Okay. Will you show it to us when you're done? Okay. Usually I don't give my participants an opportunity not to participate, but. Thank you.
Ellen.
Yes.
Is a rest a pause?
Or is
the
rest
the rest
of the song?
Rest of the song. Oh, okay. We have to put our hand on.
No.
All right, who's ready? Lisa, are you ready to recite your poem? So I'm giving you no choice. I know certain people in here, and so I take advantage of that. All right, here's our poem.
And spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly. And frogs in the pools singing at night, and wild plum trees in tremulous light. There will come soft rains and the smell of the ground, and swallows circling with their shimmering sound. And frogs in the pools singing at night, and wild plum trees in tremulous light. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly.
Very nice. You guys want to show us your artwork? Are you done? Are you guys ready to dance? Do we need to do a beat? Notice there's no twerking in that, right? No. Thank you, ladies. Round of applause. And now our gentlemen are going to sing. Are you guys ready? Are you guys ready?
Oh, we don't need a microphone.
So they can hear it. All right. All right, 1, 2, 3, go.
Boat, gently down the row, row, gently down the boat.
Woo! All right, so very nice job. I owe you. I would owe you too, but I don't owe you guys as well, but I owe him. All right, so kind of just a way to get people thinking that these can be easy. This is actually more of an event, right? But easy, kind of fun, have some opportunity. And then also you could maybe even do a math lesson if you wanted to and thinking about the chance of the dice and that kind of stuff. All right, last but not least, I want to show you a quick website. I created a tiny URL. And if you go to that tiny URL, which you should not need permission to go to, and I'm going to try and get there because for some reason it always asks me for permission. But when I send it to everybody else, it works. Yeah, it always does this. I don't know why it does that. It won't do this for you, but it does it for me for some reason. I don't know what my computer's doing. Anyway, let me show you real quick. So I created this tiny URL, and on this tiny URL, I downloaded some performance tasks that our friend Ed Raber has developed over time, and other people around the states have also done. And so I just wanted to show it to you really quick so that you can go there and maybe look at some of them. Who did I send it to? Joe. I sent it to Joe and Lucia. Whatever. I don't know where they're at. I do have some hard copies, though, so I brought a couple with me. I have enough for one for everybody, but not the same one. So there are three different math assessments that are loaded for three different grade levels. This one happens to be an Algebra 1.
There are, I think, two or three science performance tasks. This one has to do with sound and space. So if you're interested in that one, you can grab one of these copies. This is one from the visual arts, and it has to do with high school. It's a performance task about an artist pop can label and collaborative ad campaign. So that's one task. A language arts, which is a passage-based writing piece for third grade and for third and fourth grade for social studies, a performance task based on Great Lakes Water Public Discourse. As you look at them, you're going to see some similarities. One, there's a cover that tells the kids what it's all about. There are instructions on how to complete it and what you need to do. It talks about which standards are aligned, and then there's all rubrics. And this in and of itself, how to develop a high-quality performance-like rubric, is really powerful as well. So I would like you to have a couple, and they're up here, so feel free. But let me put up that website again, because all of them are on that website. And you can go and pick and choose whichever might be most appropriate for you. Oh, sorry. There it is. So there's the tiny URL. Can everybody see it? This is posted on the website as well for the Michigan School Testing Conference, this PowerPoint. So if you upload it and then you just click on it, it should take you right to that Google page where all of these are housed. So I think we started 5 minutes early, so we're about right on time. But if anybody has any comments or questions or anything you'd like to share for the group before we go about our day. All right. Well, I have a lot of extra handouts. So if anybody needs any of this stuff, please take it so I don't have to take it home with me. And thank you very much. It was a pleasure.